T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
Mr. Trump has magic about him.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people.
How can I describe our leaders better than the word stupid?
This guy has magic coming out his ears.
This is the most unethical sham.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've never known a guy more talented at untangling politics so that anyone can understand.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, I wasn't quite sure here if I end up on the air on time, because I was on the phone, I believe, with Dave. What do you think? Was it New Delhi that I was on the phone with here?
It sounded like it. Oh, yeah.
I got a call from my friends at the Post-Dispatch a short time ago saying that my credit card did not go through, and I knew what it was right away because I hate it when this happens. I think everybody does, too. I could not read, and you tried to help me with this, remember?
I tried.
I couldn't read the 3-digit code on the back of my debit card.
Yeah, I was writing that down just in case. I mean, just to help you out, you know, not to take your information.
Yeah, you took a stab at it. We tried several different combinations. I was trying to buy something, and it wouldn't let me. But then I had to call U.S. Bank, and then, of course, they sent me a new debit card. Well, then it's got a new expiration date and a new 3-digit code, so now all of the automatic billing, like for our local paper, I actually pay for that thing, which is a little embarrassing, but I do like the sports section. Let's see. Wall Street Journal. Let me see if I can do this. LA Times, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post. What else is there? Oh, Hot Air. I subscribe to. There's a bunch of them. So now I got
a lot.
Well, I think there's more than that. Now I have to go through and probably redo all those.
How many print editions do you get?
I don't get any anymore.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. No. No. No longer print editions. Just all digital. Well, because like even the Post subscription, if you get it delivered, it's almost like $40 or something.
Wow.
I don't even think it's worth the $15 I pay for the digital. But anyway, but we got that taken care of, so we're off.
That poor guy.
I was nice to
you
him.
You were. He was just going through his normal script that he had to go through, and you took it well, and I think he was just, you know,
he was going along
for the ride.
He wanted to make sure that my address was correct, and I said, you know, I gave him the address, and I said, High Ridge, Missouri. He goes, all right, sir, let me see if I get this right. High Ridge, Montana. I'm like, I'm sure there is a High Ridge, Montana, but that is not where I live.
A few miles away from where you live.
Right. So, all right. So all is well with the world with my debit card. A couple of things I want to talk about. Look, Kamala Harris is out of this race. I was off by 2 weeks. I predicted 2 weeks ago, right around this time, I think it was even a Tuesday, I said she's going to be out by the end of the week. Well, the writing was certainly on the wall, and she's out. Here is Uncle Joe. You know, that narrows the field a little bit for the Democrats. Uncle Joe weighing in here.
She is a first-rate intellect, first-rate candidate, and it's a real competitor. I mixed emotions about it. Because she is really a solid, solid person.
Yeah, this is the fun part when they all suck up to the people that are dropping off. Now, several of these people, it's funny because I think you could take a microphone and go out to a large swath of the country and say, hey, who? I don't even know the names of the guys that dropped out yesterday. I honestly couldn't tell you just off the top of my head. Nobody knew them. But even with Kamala Harris, people outside of California, unless you follow politics, you wouldn't know who she is. I will tell you here again, this is good advice for those of you who pay attention here. Any kind of political predictions that I make, and I try not to get into the political prediction game anymore. You would have thought I would have learned my lesson in 1992 with Bill Clinton, and you certainly would have thought I learned my lesson with Donald Trump in 2016, but I thought, and I wasn't alone in this, so there was a big group of people that thought that she had a pretty built-in advantage. She had a good staff. They got out of the gate quickly. She was raising money, and she had California and the California primary, which was bumped up. So it just didn't work out. She never got traction. She made some missteps and she's out. Now, will she support Uncle Joe? Could Kamala be It's hard for me to believe that whoever the nominee is, whether it's Mayor Pete or Bernie Sanders or whoever that is, if it's a white person, you, especially if it's Mayor Pete, you're going to have an African-American on the ticket because Mayor Pete can't get black votes. Hillary Clinton couldn't get black votes. So there's going to have to be a little bit more than just who is on the top of the ticket. Having said that, I think most people don't, you know, we've seen research on this. Most people don't make their decision based on that second person on the ticket. Now, Uncle Joe's in Iowa right now. He's campaigning. We're getting close to you. These caucuses are a month away. We're several weeks away. It's going to be here before you know it. Christmas just a few weeks away, right? So he's in Iowa. He's talking about Hiawatha.
Well, sure. I think there's enthusiasm for her. The context of our discussion, which is, you know, I'm not going to have these discussions with you all anymore.
All right. So that, just in case you were lost there, Hiawatha is Elizabeth Warren, who her latest lie is about her kids going to public school versus private school. That was another doozy. You didn't hear about it, though, because the mainstream media did not cover it. So that was one of her many lies here recently.
In terms of, you know, my being getting into the place of being a prognosticator, the point I was making was that I don't think the bulk of the enthusiasm of the Democratic Party is for Medicare for all. There is enthusiasm for people who support that. There's great enthusiasm for it. But I don't think there is, that's where the center of the party is, or where the left or the right of the party is.
No, I think he's right on that, and that's something that has hurt her because the Medicare for All has not caught on. So, Kamala Harris out, you're going to see more of these. I think several people drop out between now and Christmas, even some of the better-known names. They can't raise money. They're losing their organization. And I think the writing is on the wall. So it's going to be narrowed just naturally here in the next month or so. We have a lot to get to. We have Senator Josh Hawley on the line with us this afternoon. The impeachment report was just issued, by the way, in the House. I have not had a chance to read that. I don't know if Senator Hawley would have, but he's coming up here in just a couple of minutes to talk about not only impeachment, but there was a really interesting piece after a speech that he gave to the American Principles Project that caught a lot of people, caught their attention, caught a lot of people's attention. So he's coming up. What else do we have here? Oh, we got Fusion GPS information that I think is really, really interesting. And then we're into the next hour in this black hole that has been discovered. I'm kind of fascinated by that. And a bunch of other stuff, and I have audio as well. I want to talk about something, though, personally here. It might have even been more than 10 years ago. I lived in the city of St. Louis in Holly Hills, and I started noticing bat guano on my... I didn't know it was bat guano. It looked like... almost like cigarette tobacco, not ashes, but just sort of like tobacco spread everywhere. Dave, have you ever had bats before in your house? So I didn't know what it was. Well, come to find out, it was bats living in the eaves. They weren't in my home. And I don't know how I tracked him down. I'm pretty sure I mentioned it on the air at the time. And maybe Ron reached out, Ron Scheller, who became a friend of mine, the bat guy, as he's known. We've had him on the air several times. And Ron is just a fascinating guy. And he used to sell motorcycles, and if he's listening right now, I'm going to get part of his bio wrong. He used to do these things called trials. You know what trials is? It's like when they would take motorcycles or dirt bikes, and you could hop around from... It's crazy if you could see what they do. Just Google it sometimes. So he was an expert in that. Anyway, he reached out. He helped me with my bat problem, and as so often is the case with something that happens in my life, because I'm on the radio, you know, people reach out. Sometimes they think it's cool or whatever. It's the radio guy. But in Ron's case, we really became friends. And we I guided him into a couple. I had a neighbor that had a bat problem. So anyway, and some of you might be able to piece this together. Ron invited me to go up to where he's from, which is in the Mount Olive, Illinois area, Staunton, Illinois, to beaver trap, something I had never done before in my entire life. And I'm like, I'm up for new experiences. So I went up there and he taught me about trapping. He used to do it when he was a kid. And I've done it several times, muskrat, beaver trapping, took my little brother, who is with Big Brothers Big Sisters, Cameron, up there a few years ago. Well, I got to know his father, Butch Scheller. And Butch would, because people would ask the question, I remember Carol asked me this question one time and I gave her an honest answer. She said, well, what do you do when you get the beaver, right? What do you do with beaver? My answer was, you eat it. Now stop laughing. It's true. And Butch Scheller made me on several occasions delicious, delicious beaver stew. And squirrel stew. I had squirreled. These things that I, even though I've done some hunting over the past 30 years, I'd never really eaten some of these things or trapped or learned about that. Ron has an amazing knowledge and a passion for wildlife and trapping, and this is what he does. He parlayed his knowledge and his childhood and his skills into what he does now as a wildlife, I don't even know what he'd call himself. I mean, if you got a raccoon stuck somewhere in your house or bats or whatever, that's what he does. The bat guy, you can find him online. Well, his father, Butch, passed away after a battle with cancer, and the visitation is actually today in Mount Olive, Illinois, and Butch was 81 years old. I did not know him very well, but every time I came up, and he was a big KMOX listener, every time I came up to visit Ron, we would always start at his dad's house and, you know, get dressed there and kind of go out for our hunts or our trapping. We'd come back and Butch would have some amazing, you know, meal prepared for us. And the generosity was amazing. And he was very sick. I was disappointed. I wanted to go see him in the hospital because Ron had kind of alerted me to his situation not too long ago. And then I was sad to learn over the weekend. I saw a Facebook post and I reached out to Ron yesterday. I had not heard on Friday that Butch had passed away, but he was just a, you know, for people who know him a lot better than I did listening right now, he was just a really, really generous, interesting guy, outdoorsman. This is where he taught Ron and, you know, the other kids trapping, fishing, raising pigeons. In the obit, it says, excellent cook. I can vouch for that. So these are the people in this country that I really wish that my, you know, my friend Elizabeth Warren, Liawatha, or somebody else could come to rural Illinois or rural Missouri and meet these people that they demonize so often over the course of political campaigns and get to know the fabric of hardworking people who have hunted and trapped to put food on their table, to you know, protect themselves, to make some money perhaps in the past as well in a very legal way. So, you know, he meant a lot to the people in his family, and I only had a chance and opportunity to get to know him a little bit, but he left an impression, and I know he left an impression on everyone that got to know him. So Jerome Paul Butch Scheller, dead at the age of 81, the visitation tonight in Mount Olive, and he will be remembered and loved, and I just wanted to send that out as a personal note this afternoon.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
We are joined this afternoon by Senator Josh Hawley to talk about a variety of issues. How are you, Senator? Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
There's a bunch of topics I want to cover, so I'm going to try to do this effectively and efficiently, if I so can. But let's first talk impeachment and where you are with this. This report came out today. I haven't had a chance to take a peek at it, so I don't think that maybe you have. I certainly haven't. You can go, I guess, and find out more and read the full House Intel report. This eventually, I'm guessing, is going to end up in the Senate where you guys are going to have a trial. But what is your impression so far of the hearings and where this process is moving forward?
I think it's the process is where it's always been since the Democrats launched it, which is that it's a purely partisan exercise of them chasing their tail and trying to bring down a duly elected president. I mean, they have, as I've said before, Mark, I mean, they have wanted to impeach the president since literally his first day in office. I mean, literally. There are Washington Post stories on the day of the inauguration about impeachment picking up steam. So this is from my point of view, this is a 3-year saga. They've never accepted the outcome of the election. And look, if we're going to have a Senate trial, my view is we may as well just get on with it. And the Senate trial will be a real trial where the president's team will actually be able to have due process and they'll be able to call witnesses and the Democrats' witnesses will get cross-examined. So frankly, I look forward to it.
Do you think that there is any possible compromise when it comes to saying, you know what, we don't think that the way that call went down and some of the other things we've learned is appropriate. It's not impeachable, but we're going to look at a censure. I mean, I'm just asking because it's being tossed out there.
Well, I think that you've got some House Democrats who've got some buyer's remorse now on the whole impeachment inquiry and are realizing that there really is no there. And there are also many of these Democrats in districts that the president won, and they're starting to get nervous. And so I think that's why you see all of a sudden this censure talk, other talks sort of popping up. But listen, I mean, this is a problem of their own creation, they being the Democrat Party, and particularly in the House, but really the whole Democrat Party. So, you know, it's their problem. I mean, they're the ones who decided not to follow the normal whistleblower process. They're the ones who decided to launch an impeachment inquiry before they had any reason to do so. And now we know that there is nothing impeachable. And all of these hearings, all of this stuff, what have we learned? Nothing we didn't already know from the phone call, which is that there's no impeachable offenses here. So what they need to do is wind the whole thing down, admit that they were wrong. Look, they're going to have in a few months the chance to run their own candidate to try and replace the president, and they ought to make their case to the American people the Democratic way and not try and overturn the results of an election.
I read a really interesting piece about you a couple weeks ago, and I've been wanting to talk to you about this. It was written by a guy at National Review by the name of Michael Brennan Daugherty, and he said this: Missouri Senator Josh Hawley might be the most interesting thinker in the U.S. Senate, or that the U.S. Senate has seen since Daniel Patrick Moynihan, or at least he's the senator today who most resembles Moynihan as a sweeping and adventurous social critic. Talked about a speech that you gave a couple of weekends ago to the American Principles Project Foundation that the writer of this column called remarkable. And you touched on things in here that probably might surprise some people that are listening today, maybe people who aren't fans of yours or supporters of yours, because just for example, you talked about the rise in deaths of despair, suicides, drug overdoses, alcohol-related deaths, many, many things that are happening in this country that you outlined in this speech that are problematic to you should probably get more attention. So what was that speech about, Josh?
Well, it's really just about the life that Missourians are living every day, which is that more and more folks are struggling to make it, struggling to hold their families together, struggling to hold their communities together. And it's really, I've been trying to say the same thing over and over, Mark, since I've been here in the last few months in Washington, which is that D.C. needs to quit focusing on the people who already have it made and the people who have all of the influence and power in this town. And they need to get focused back on the middle of our society, I mean, the middle class, the working class, the people who sustain our state and who sustain this country and who are hurting in many ways. Deaths of despair, for instance, suicides, drug overdoses, alcohol-related deaths, those are hitting everybody in America, but they're hitting hardest people who come from middle-class, working-class backgrounds. That's something that it doesn't get talked much about in D.C., and it's insane that it doesn't, because it is a huge, huge issue in our state and around the country.
Yeah, well, we talk about all these things, and look, I play a role in this too, all these things that really don't affect people very much when these things do. But if I did not hear the audio of this speech, but if I were to read people some of the things in this speech, they probably, or they might assume that they're coming from a Democratic presidential candidate, only because you talk about issues like wealth inequality. You say you've heard the numbers as to wealth. The top 10% earners control 77% of the country's total wealth. That's an issue. There's no doubt. You explain and highlight the differences with economic divide relating to a high school versus a college education, some of these things that, you know, we've known for a while. But the question then becomes, because I would agree with you, I think that Michael at National Review agreed with all these things, but one of the questions he also said is, what will Josh Hawley do to solve them, or what realistically can you do? What is your answer to that?
Well, take for example, a bill I proposed earlier this year that would allow students, workers, to take federal student loan money into job training programs and into apprenticeship programs so that you don't have to go to a four-year college in order to get some. Yeah, I mean, this is a common sense idea. Why, most people don't go to a four-year college and they don't want to. And you know what? That's fine. But they ought to be able to get good job training and a good job. And so I think there are practical things we can do, like allowing federal loan money to be available for apprenticeship programs, including ones, by the way, that are set up by private companies, that are set up by nonprofit organizations.
Right.
I mean, this is the kind of thing we should be doing to open up more pathways for folks to get good jobs, build their families, keep their communities.
I love it. I think those are great ideas. We need more ideas like that. Because we're always on limited time, and I can appreciate that, but I do want to talk, and you brought this up in the speech, when it comes to social media, some of the effects, that's been one of your pet issues. When it comes to the my wife alerted me to this whole TikTok thing with these short videos, and every time I think I'm on top of social media, something else happens. But you have a bill that deals with TikTok, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah, TikTok if you've now been on the app, you've seen it. I mean, it's really such a fun app, and it creates these videos, and they're super fun. Nobody would know from using it that this company is actually owned by a Chinese conglomerate, and they share their data with the Chinese government, the Chinese military. And they do that because they're required to under China's law. This is for us. I mean, you think about our kids, you think about people who use this app. I mean, more teenagers use TikTok now than use Facebook. So it is a huge app, but this company is sweeping up all of these images. They're also accessing people's phone books. They're accessing their locations. They're potentially accessing text messages. The thought that Beijing would be able to get all that stuff is not just horrifying, it's wrong. So my bill would prevent that. It would say that companies like TikTok that are owned by foreign governments that are hostile to us cannot transfer our data to those foreign governments, and it puts new limits on their ability to collect our information in the first place.
Mark Zuckerberg was on with Gail King, CBS This Morning, said this about Facebook, maybe breaking up Facebook.
I think that there are real issues. I think a lot of people are upset and are talking about measures like breaking up the company that aren't actually going to fix these issues, right? I mean, breaking up Facebook isn't going to address the question of political discourse.
I don't know if you had a chance to watch the entire interview, but do you have a reaction to that?
Well, he said exactly the same thing to me when he came to see me a few months ago or a few weeks ago. And I said to him, I thought that Facebook ought to sell off WhatsApp and Instagram, you know, two platforms they didn't design that they now own. And the reason I told him that is I said, listen, you are taking all of the information, all of our information on WhatsApp and Instagram, and you're using it on Facebook. I mean, it's this massive data collection. You're not doing it with our permission. Nobody gets to say, wait, no, don't use my info. My bottom line on this, Mark, as we've talked before, is I think our personal information is private property. I mean, you own your information, or you should. And I think that these companies like Facebook shouldn't be able to scoop it up without you consenting to that in some way. And they certainly shouldn't be able to sell it to third parties without you saying, yeah, okay, I'm good with that. So that's the basic issue here. And Facebook is a big, big problem in that regard.
Look, I would love, and I don't know when we can do this, but I sincerely, and obviously I'll have my people reach out to your people, I'd love to have a further discussion of the speech that you gave before American Principles Project Foundation, because I think people need to hear those ideas and need to hear a little bit more about what you were saying. I did post it up on Twitter a couple weeks ago when I first saw it, but I don't know if there's any way to carve out some time. If you're going to be in a 3-month trial, that might be difficult, but we'll see if we can pull it off.
I'd love to. I would love to. Absolutely.
All right, Senator, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Senator Josh Hawley with us this afternoon covering a variety of topics.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Welcome back. We have a bunch of stuff still to come this afternoon, and I do have I got a couple of little fun stories, and I'm hoping to drag Carol into this after the top of the hour. Somebody put a post up about the things sometimes that newscasters say that nobody else says, and Russ Mitchell from used to be with CBS News, he's a St. Louis guy, is in Cleveland now, I think, still as a news anchor, weighed in on that. I just thought that some of those were pretty interesting, and I think that you as a listener will be able to relate to things, because sometimes broadcasters write things and they never even say those things. My example is gubernatorial. I learned this from a guy by the name of Merv Block, who was a great newsman, CBS in the past, before there was all the nonsense in the media, and he wrote a book that said it was about news writing, and he said even the governor doesn't use the word gubernatorial. It's called the governor's race, but journalists think they're so important they have to use special words. So that's coming up here a little bit later this afternoon. You hear a lot about Fusion GPS and how the sealed dossier plays into all of the controversy on Capitol Hill. Julie Kelly wrote a piece that I found for AmericanGreatness.com on the Fusion book that I guess is written by Glenn Simpson and Peter Fritsch, the co-owners of Fusion GPS. That's the research firm, the Oppo firm responsible for that dossier, and probably, as Julie writes, the most infamous dossier in American political history. But there are some things here that I think people should be aware of, and I invited Julie to come on here and talk about it this afternoon. Julie Kelly, how are you? Welcome to KMOX in St. Louis.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I still think that there are things in the Steele dossier that people can't get their arms around. But, you know, one of the things that they write in this book, and you quote it, is they think highly of themselves, Simpson and Fritsch. A handful of documents in recent times have bent the course of history deeply enough to merit their own sobriquet. I had to look that word up, by the way. I still don't know if I know what it means. The Pentagon Papers, the Warren Report, the Starr Report. Time will tell whether the Steele dossier deserves to take its place among them. Now, amidst the reflection that I have, or the reaction that I have of kind of throwing up in my mouth just a little bit, that seems quite comical, just to put it in that context.
Right. I don't think we need a lot of time to see whether the dossier will be among some of the... I'm surprised they didn't throw the Constitution in there, because their arrogance level is,
yeah,
is truly remarkable. So we know that it will not be among any relevant papers that the government has ever produced. They are con men. This is political propaganda. The only way that the dossier will be remembered is how it polluted our political discourse for almost 3 years and were served as evidence presented to a secret court to convince that court to allow the FBI to spy on an American citizen for a year.
So the book is called Crime in Progress, Inside the Steele Dossier and the Fusion Investigation of Donald Trump. This obviously is coming out in... This is going to be something we're going to talk about next Monday when Michael Horowitz, who's the IG, the Inspector General for the Justice Department, releases his findings on the investigation and the potential FISA abuse. So I don't know what your feeling is when it comes to what information might come out in that report. We're getting little, you know, trickles. The Washington Post had a story again last night that seemingly downplayed some of the bombshell aspects that are potential from that report. But this plays hand in hand with the PR for the book as well, doesn't it?
It definitely does. I mean, they're definitely doing a lot of spin. This book is really designed as a resource for journalists and Democrats to use to go quickly to get excuses and justification for anything that comes out of not just the Horowitz report, but as you know, he's scheduled to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee next Wednesday, the 11th, Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General. So this is a built-in excuse machine. But there are also some really interesting revelations, one of which, and I've covered this issue extensively for more than 2 years, and I never knew this, and I confirmed with some people on the Hill, too. We did not know before that Christopher Steele actually hired Fusion first, before Fusion hired Christopher Steele to prepare the dossier. Christopher Steele was representing Oleg Deripaska, the Putin-linked oligarch, who was in trouble with the United States government. Christopher Steele was also representing him, trying to get him out of trouble with the Department of Justice. At the same time, so Glenn Simpson, head of Fusion, is representing a man representing one Russian oligarch. Glenn Simpson is also representing another Russian company, Pravazon, whose owner is also linked to the Kremlin. So while these two are going around D.C. and the Beltway and everywhere else saying that Donald Trump is a Russian asset, they are the ones actually working for Kremlin-linked Russian businessmen, trying to get them out of trouble with the Justice Department for money laundering. So it's just a scam of major proportions.
Right, hang on line, because I want you to connect the dots further, because there's some other interesting little tidbits in here that you've exposed that I think people will be interested in. Julie Kelly, who wrote and has been writing about this for a while, AmericanGreatness.com. The latest piece is there. We'll come back with more in a moment on KMOX.
Get home fast and informed. Total Information PM starts weekdays at 4 on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX and KMOX.com.
All right, welcome back. Julie Kelly is with me. She is a writer for AmericanGreatness.com. We're talking about Fusion GPS and the book that's out from the guys who ran that. And, you know, the one thing that we haven't talked to, the name, I want you to kind of connect the dots a little bit more, Julie, here, and talk about Paul Manafort and how he plays a role in all this.
Right. So Paul Manafort, we all know, has been convicted and is currently imprisoned after being convicted based on Robert Mueller's investigation into the Trump campaign. It had nothing to do with collusion, some other matters. But Paul Manafort was being investigated by both Glenn Simpson as part of his dirt digging into the Trump campaign, and also Christopher Steele, who is representing Oleg Deripaska, who Manafort and Deripaska used to be business associates, and Deripaska thought that Paul Manafort had stolen tens of millions of dollars from him. So that was the connection with Paul Manafort. So one was working for a Russian oligarch looking to recover money or find out Manafort's involvement in the loss of that, of tens of millions of dollars, but also Glenn Simpson was investigating him, trying to dig up dirt on his role in the Trump campaign.
So you have these two authors. The book is called Crime in Progress, Inside the Steele Dossier and the Fusion Investigation of Donald Trump. They're comparing themselves or this investigation, this dossier with the Pentagon Papers. But there are some strange, what they refer to as simply coincidences in this report, right?
Right. There are so many coincidences, allegedly. So this is their cover-up for what might be coming, not just with the Horowitz report, but also John Durham's criminal investigation into the entire FBI's investigation into the Trump campaign, also what happened after the election with Jim Comey's FBI. And so there are a lot of coincidences. One of them is that they happen to hire the wife of a top Obama Justice Department official. That would have been Nellie Orr, who worked for Fusion GPS. Her husband, Bruce Orr, was a top official at the Obama Justice Department. They also happened to be friends with Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele, it's interesting, Mark. Here's a British citizen, right, a British operative. He has connections in the highest places in the U.S. government, including the Justice Department, including the FBI, including the State Department. So he's becoming more of an, I wouldn't say interesting figure, but a shadowy kind of corrupt figure, how this British operative who's paid not just by Russian oligarchs, also by Fusion GPS, who is paid, he was paid by the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign for his dossier, but also was an FBI informant or human source, as they call it. They don't want to really call him a spy. His wide-ranging connections with the U.S. government should be troubling to everyone because he could have walked into the State Department. He met with FBI agents in Rome. He met with top Obama Justice Department officials in Washington, D.C. He could pick up the phone and call anyone, and they would return his call. And that is a little bit alarming for someone who had such sway in our government, used his materials, as I said before, a secret court, planted damaging stories about Trump in the press before and after the election.
What are your expectations on the Horowitz report next week?
You know, I have to say, I watched Michael Horowitz's testimony. He comes across to me as a man of integrity. I think he's one of the least arrogant people at the Justice Department, if you could believe it, after Bill Barr, I mean, since he came on board in February. I've read his reports. I think he pulled some punches with the Clinton email investigation report, but he did not in terms of the hand of Jim Comey's leaking of classified information. Remember, it was Michael Horowitz who referred Jim Comey to the Justice Department for three criminal referrals for his mishandling and hiding basically classified information, which were his memos. And the Justice Department refused to prosecute Jim Comey for that. So he's got a little bit of a, I mean, not, I don't want to say questionable track record, but he's not somebody that I'm expecting right off the bat to exonerate everyone involved.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, especially with this thing, there's expectations on both sides here. And certainly I think the Republicans think that there's going to be vindication here, but they may be getting a little bit too far ahead of themselves.
Well, that's true. And, you know, Michael Horowitz, as the inspector general, has limited tools and limited power. Also, remember, he's the one who found the page-struck text messages that the FBI and Justice Department tried to withhold and really tried to destroy. He's the one, I think he went through the Defense Department to finally uncover those. I think he does a thorough job. I'm not expecting, I don't know how many criminal referrals, if any, he will recommend, but I think his report will at least be thorough. And even if there aren't criminal referrals, at least give people a good idea of the corruption that was going on in the FBI at that time.
Well, I'm out of town for part of next week, but maybe we'll have you back on to sort of digest and analyze that. Julie Kelly, thanks so much for doing some great work on this. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Here.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.